Okay. So now, in this, it made me think of the Snuggle House and Matthew closing the Snuggle House, which makes me very sad. But has our tactility moved so far outside of us that people are now terrified of that?
Yeah, most of the...
We only want to grasp with our extensions?
Well, when did the artist become a cultural hero? The first novelist was like Charles Dickens. He became huge mass celebrity. So this celebrity culture of the writer, of the creator, the artist, the musician, the sculptor, the painter, this art, role of the arts as a cultural figurehead, almost like a secular religion, comes in with electricity, with the telegraph. And you look at every art form. You can be with Impressionism, then Fauvism, and then Surrealism or Dadaism. All the isms, there's all kinds of them, 100 years ago. And then the changes in literature and the changes in painting and music with the 12-tone scale. All that was a reaction to the electric tactility. So tactility was floating in, absorbing all the cultures and affecting all the cultures. And now you brought up Snuggle House. Okay, so every revolution from suffragettes up to, you could say, women's lib or even fundamentalism were responses by different cultures to the tactile extension. So the invisible resonating tactility is the hardest for any culture to grasp since culture was made up of speech and writing and all these things that every culture had for thousands of years. They can't. You have to go to South America, come across some Aborigines in the jungle. There's a tactile culture. And so we had become like that technically with our environment. And you see all the arts and sciences change. Science goes from Newton to Einstein to quantum to string theory. All our changes in the modeling people did with this legacy of mortar and cultural institutions. So you would look at what happens to sex, the image of sex from the 19th century all the way through. And now with four bodies and the legal profession having nothing to legislate but indifferent chemical bodies that aren't even caring to have morality anymore or any kind of ethics, even politically, don't even want to pay taxes, no social community, you bring in a panicking visual kinetic American institution like the courts, and then bring in a tactile revolution called the Snuggle House. It's like every other revolution in the last 150 years. They all involve tactility, and they always cause outrage. See, so Snuggle House, you would say, what is it about that kind of tactility that is not prostitution? It's not any of the things that were tactile before. Why is it outraged? Why is the some part of the American psyche outraged? Because that's the identity of Americans. They've got visual kinetic bias. And they look for non-visual, there's the real war in the streets. They look for non-visual modalities or means to shoot at them, to take it down so they assert their identity. You express your identity through asserting it and being basically violent. So here's Matthew brought in a tactile phenomenon into a panicky, simulated retrieval of visual and kinetic space, and they have nothing to do but to get pissed off. And they even tried to frame them and set it up because it's just like medicine or just like the diseases that are let loose. They program society with their bias and their usefulness. So you got to find things that are something that would outrage their usefulness. You see, is that get your point? Mm-hmm. So
that was my question.
You could say that Matthew was a retrieval of the Impressionists, of Wagner, his operatic big productions, mixed media productions, and a retrieval of every art movement and science movement, holeopathically, which is my term, a tiny little thing there in Wisconsin, replayed the attack of tactility against every culture that's around. And that's what electricity has done. So he mimed the attack of tactility, this little Snuggle House idea. And anybody who's not programmed by their culture, even though they are programmed by their five bodies, but are not, most Americans are not programmed by American culture anymore. They don't follow the rules. But there's still institutions that taxes requires, and that's who Matthew, that's his only audience. He created something that gave them a purpose. And you can see that they're ridiculous. They should be doing something better than that. They look for someone, little nothing, to give them a sense of purpose. And it looks exaggerated. It looks overkill. It's overkill. But he's in. Mm-hmm. He's inside the Android meme, playing off memes of these things. So it's always a multiple body process, and that's why we come in Ion Products. They got to be real careful or cagey or shrewd in the way we present ourselves, including the cold fusion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we know we're up against a knee-jerk reaction by the Android meme.
I'm so glad you just brought up the cold fusion, because now that's making me think of something else. So in this book, McLuhan also talked about war always being a result of lag between
yes.
media. So
right, let's just explain that. When literacy came in the civilization started to get organized, that upset the huge majority of humanity, which were barbarian or nomadic tribes moving around. All of a sudden, somebody starts staying in one place and building a civilization there. That was a direct confrontation against the mobile tribes, and so that was the endless battle through history of civilization against the barbarians. But now you have different media environments fighting each other. And what did you just say? Okay, so war, by the 20th century, war was no longer civilians fighting the barbarians or left fighting the right. It was an identity crisis by the society to do a crash program to catch up to the newest technology that snuck up on them and changed everybody's sensory ratios. So war became a means of speeded up development. It was an excuse to do a crash program and develop the technologies you thought were required, because there was something afoot, and it's usually the invisible electric environment. So radio, it creates World War II. TV creates World War III. And before radio, the railway created World War I and the telegraph. So you can see that war is a natural product of society mobilizing its own image and what it thinks it has to get more stuff done. So that's why McLuhan said war is education.
Okay, and then on a sidebar, he also mentioned that military is very industrial, and industry is very militaristic, so that kind of goes along with it.
Well, the military do the important thing of inventing new technologies.
Okay.
Many of the technologies of the last 50 years were civilian applications of new breakthroughs done by secret groups. You can call them the military, the Pentagon, but they're laboratories. And the lab is the hidden ground in terms of new technologies until we showed up. Now we're a new kind of lab. But up to this point, during the physical phase and then the Android meme phase, the lab was the hidden engineer of changing society. And, of course, most societies would say, yeah, you better try to invent new stuff, because Mortar is paranoid, and if another society invented something, then they could take us over. So it's probably justified to have black operations. That's how we understood the Secret Council 10, is we supported black ops and the development of new technologies, because you don't know who else was doing it. So that, but there's another point there. I think the Evergreens brought it up. The Fifth Army, the Armageddon 500 years from now, will be a technology that will be developed that will wipe out everybody's knowledge of whatever they had before. Their memory, the whole understanding of how they got here will be lost. And that'll cause a war, whether to implement that technology or not. Now, there's another point. So you got the labs. So you got people developing technologies. The Boodians would not come during the Cold War, because if they landed in Russia or if they landed here, then the other side would become paranoid that the culture that the UFOs landed in would get new advanced technology. So the Boodians didn't start really being obvious until the 90s, after the Cold War ended. So that's an interesting side thing that the aliens knew. The ETs knew that you didn't want to upset the endless war making new technologies that every culture was doing, engaged in.
So is there really a war over oil? Is that
Among oil companies. That's their what I call mythic stage. That's the technology they believe in. That's what their livelihood is. All those involved in the oil industry, that's millions of employees, they want to keep that industry going so they keep employed. But all around them, there's a digital society growing that has no cash base and other energy developments happening, their dinosaurs are being obsolesced. But they, about 20 years ago, a lot of the oligarchs who invest a lot in the oil industry dumped that and went into chemistry. The oligarchs who made a lot of money in the 20th century through the oil companies don't believe in the oil anymore. They invest in other things. But okay. You've got millions of people employed, and they are either going to get wiped out rapidly by some dramatic upheaval, or they'll limp along and just slowly adjust while they get cancer.
Oh.
So there's different phases of change going on, endless amounts of change, which the clue is Zappa's music. He makes music with many kinds of rhythms going on, you know, 15, 16 times, 3, 4 times, 8 kinds in one piece, because he's showing the global theater and all the different environments, and each one's a different frequency or rhythm. So we daily deal with this onslaught of multiple rhythms. So in music, there's Zappa, an example. He adapted to the present, forced to make his music like it is, to be true to the present, what it was actually affecting people, or at least a metaphor to know about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then what about the automobile? Because McLuhan said in Understanding Media that it would be go the way of the horse, like, soon. You think that's going to happen?
Well, he changes
the GM bailout kind of.
Yeah, listen, like, to this. Listen to this. In the early 70s, he changed his view. He said that that the car did not go out like the horse and buggy. It did in people's preferences because they travel by television and cable TV. But the older media don't necessarily go away. They just change their uses. So what happened to the car in North America, it started to be used for privacy. As the American was more bombarded by information, he thought, coming out from the outer world into his homes in all the new electric media, he couldn't have his visually precious privacy. So he would go out in a car and get stuck in a traffic jam on purpose so he had time to think and organize his visual concepts for his livelihood, whatever he was doing in society. So traffic jams became a way of visually biased people to reestablish their visual identity. So cars, that's why people would not take on public transport, which could have easily been brought in, you know, if you had a socialist management with, let's say, Kennedy or Ted Kennedy becomes president in 1968, and he has the unions and socialist ideas, so he brings in public transportation. Well, the Americans would have rebelled, not necessarily the young kids, but a lot of older Americans, because they said, well, you're taking away my privacy I get from my car. So the car no longer was to take you out of the city and get you into the country. That's why Ford made the car. Now it was to reprop up the private space that the book created. Now, isn't that interesting? You get a whole different way to look at traffic jams. It's a cultural art form in North America to preserve private visual identity. Meanwhile, and that's just a one part of a person's lives, they still got their four bodies growing around them. So now, where are we now? The car is, well, you've got several generations now that don't require that literate identity, that space to think in. The young kids, they can multiple task, so they wouldn't need to use the car. And so they live at home, the young kids. They don't have a car, they have nothing, like the American dream 50 years ago. So yeah, the car has disappeared psychically in many ways. Even the retrieval factor of the car has disappeared. But here we are today with so many bodies and so many situations, and nobody can get a fulcrum point to sort of move it into a more harmonious ecology. So we just continue living in what Zappa called Civilization Phase 3, endless chaos. So yes, mm-hmm. The car culture is just another loser medium bouncing along trying to get its grants from the non-government that doesn't have any money itself. So that's the joke, that's the hilarity of the absurdity of our World War X we're in, which is a war between all the different environments.
That was my next question, is money. I think it's interesting that it's called currency,
right.
So that it has, you know, an electric whatever going along with that. And what's going on with our national debt and all that? What's that? Tell me about that.
Well, national debt came in with Keynes in the 30s. The economy was built on debt, and you hear what I'm going to play tonight. I've done 290 private sessions, me and Carolyn. That's from 2009 to summer of 2010, so over a year. Now, starting in the summer of 2010, we got the cold fusion products, we got the RNA drops. A lot of the sessions are on those issues. So I don't have as much endless hours to play people because it's all confidential in lab work, we'll call it, right? So what do I have? Okay. I got melting titanium. I've got over 100 melting titaniums that were done every Tuesday night. So I just randomly said, well, I don't want to begin at the beginning of the melting titaniums. They're too simple, where Ian would just pick up images from the audience, and then we'd discuss it the next day in cash flow. Later, we developed melting titanium was used to sort of rehearse what we were going to do on cash flow the next day and many other topics and all kinds of things. So I just, you know, out of the blue, pick number, melting titanium number 50 out of the hat. So, okay, let's begin with melting titanium 50, which is March 23rd, 2010, I think. And I started listening to it. It was awesome. You got this whole history of the Federal Reserve, and the very thing you're asking about is all laid out in probably better detail than whatever was uttered before in fragmented ways on cash flow. So we're going to hear about that history of the national debt later tonight, or at least the it's 2.5 hours, so you'll go through the first part and then get into that. So
and that's different than that popular one that was going around a couple
of years
ago.
You mean the melting titanium one?
No, yeah, your one is different than the one that everybody who is a Project Camelot person knows about.
What is that one? Talking about the information farm analysis that you guys did with the giant pool of money.
Right. Oh yeah. This is more details that Ion. I don't even know if I'm supposed to play it. You know, it's got a lot of.
Oh, you're supposed to play it.
No.
No, you're supposed to play it.
Ion tells me stuff in Melting Titanium. He tells me stuff that I wasn't allowed to play. It was for my ears only. It was too dangerous to put out or upset some ecology. And Ion said, keep it to yourself. Well, I've decided that maybe Ion doesn't seem to be bothered by it now because we've moved along. Here's 3 years later. I'm going to play stuff that we weren't allowed to play 3 years ago. So you'll hear stuff that wasn't said on Information Farm or on cash flow.
Those weren't the ones that I was talking about. I can't tell you the one that I was talking about because I can't remember what it was, but it was one of those little movies that was like, maybe it was even Jordan Maxwell or something. It was somebody talking about the national debt. It's a really popular...
Oh, yeah, it's been discussed a lot in Web 2.0, or even in Web 1.0. Yeah, that's all the websites conspiracy. Everybody's an expert on money, and everybody. So I think
but
they
your
understand.
Stuff is different.
Well, we tell what who's managing it and what happened to money and how it's used today. I mean, one thing he says is that it becomes a debt economy once you have the Keynesian economics in the 30s that got everybody out of the depression. You have a guaranteed income. Money is no longer private property; it's public property. But it has to, for visually biased man, it has to be called debt. So, you know, all your dollar bills are just you carrying around debt. Now, debt is visually defined debt is puny compared to the energy that four bodies gives people. Well, you can't be in debt today on the chip body level. You have cold fusion happening in software information. You have a frictionless situation. We've got endless information. You know, it's not even priced. So what? Where is the debt issue of money? That's old chemical body issues. But people ride over that with their other bodies in a debt-free society. This is a debt-free show. We got endless time. No ratio could ever go on like this, but factors make it that Bill can do it. He's got so endless electrical time, and it's a weekend, that he doesn't even have to play his commercials. So we got a debt-free cold fusion, frictionless environment here can go on for 25 hours. That's a new use of radio.
Right.
Look at that. You know, you do an intro. Matthew, Ginny, they might play 3 or 4 minutes, or Carol show a 3-minute intro. My intro is about 45 minutes, my intro music. 45-minute intro. You know, and who has that? Nobody has. That's why this is the best place to do our stuff, Achieve Radio.
Right.
Best environment. Go ahead.
This is a little personal thing, too. I won't talk too much about myself. But after our Bob Fest, you know, went to Indianapolis to see my sister, and the day after Thanksgiving, we went downtown to see the lighting of the Christmas tree in Indianapolis, and we were invited to go see it from a friend of her husband's cousin's office, and this man is Jeff Smullyan. Ginny may know who he is because she's from Indy, but he owns Emmis Communications, which is the ninth biggest radio conglomerate in maybe just the United States, maybe more than that. But he's got a building that's the size of a city block and had us come up to the top to watch the lighting of the Christmas tree. And it was just so neat after having the radio show to be up there with this guy who's basically a radio magnet. And I'm out there talking to him, and he's like, so are you interested in media? He says to me, and I'm like, well, yeah, kind of. I didn't get into anything with him about McLuhan or anything because I didn't think he would want to talk about it. But
No, don't do that. Don't do that. Be a terrorist and say McLuhan immediately. Don't care about
Should
what
I
he
say
thinks.
It immediately?
Yeah.
Okay, I did care what he thought.
Yeah,
totally
you don't care. It doesn't matter.
Thought.
You make yourself notice. He might have given you a job if you waxed eloquent about something. The thing is, do not follow rules about what you should say to anybody. They're all idiots. Everybody's an idiot. There's no point to talk to anybody because you got many. You can live in your own little womb, matrix womb, and have fun and auto-sexualize yourself all day long with the four bodies. So don't think ahead about what you're going to say to somebody.
Okay, I'll never do that again.
Really?
But it was super cool to be up there and know that you were still on the radio at that point, probably on your third or fourth day of your broadcast. In that
doing radio that obsolesces Jeff, so you were symptomatic of that. You were
you should have told them radio. Yeah. I've been listening to a 6-day marathon for 3 days, and the only reason I came here is just to see the silly Christmas tree, and I'm going back home and put on the radio again.
Yeah, you fucked up completely.
I wish I would have.
Just like Trina and Lynn and Maddie fucked up their Jeff Wren show last week, you fucked up an opportunity to spread the word of Bob and a little bit of Carolyn on the side, you know?
I did.
You are working for me.
And I fucked up my Jeff Wren's because I fell asleep when I was
Yeah, you were the other one.
Yeah. I woke up at 1:30 and I was like, oh, shit, I missed the call. And then I was up to like 7 o'clock in the morning after that.
And people worry about how there's no community. With four or five bodies, nobody could even organize themselves or chemical body. I mean, you're just in a dreamland anyways with your different bodies, including ion body, mystery body, that if you fall asleep, this has no dramatic consequences obvious to you. You forgot.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to stay up and just snooze out. Anyway, that's enough
well, that
about
can explain.
That.
I forgot about that, but I was meaning to. I said we got to find out what happened to Katie because we're listening. She says, "Where is fucking Carol?" Katie blew it. She said she writes 3 days on dupes. I can't wait to do it. It's gonna be so exciting. All this build up, and then she doesn't even show up.
Well, my mind was blown, and my mind was still too blown to say anything to Jeff. I mean, I've only been talking about this stuff for like a week.
Yeah.
Really.
Well,
no, give me a break.
Yes, and here's the thing. This is where ion rules come in. There's no rules talking about McLuhan. You're always in the middle. You never figure it out totally. You never get it done. It's very interesting, and that's why you just use ion principles. I'm not stupid when I'm talking McLuhan. I'm just engaging Bob, and I can't lose.
Okay. Well, that makes it easier.
Yeah, there's no time when you engage in Club 22 stuff, so you can't say, oh, I've only been doing a week. No, it doesn't apply.
Okay, that makes sense.
You did.
When you said that club... Go ahead. I was just going to say, when you just said Club 22, it reminded me of the part in the chapter on Numbers 2 that was talking about... I can't remember exactly what it said, but just how numbers can be more evocative than just plain words. He mentioned, like, he might be talking about a woman and say 36, 20...
Yeah.
Hind 57 or a woman is 7
because they're
36,
iconic.
24, 36. How words
they were
like
more in the TV era. This is how you say it. The TV era shifted visual impressions to the iconographic and less alphabetic, fragmented alphabetic. So letters fell off, and numbers, which are tactile, more tactile than letters, started to be featured in brands. That's an interesting a pattern. That's a subconscious effect. That's a knee-jerk response. Now, here's
like
the thing.
That.
You know, I don't think I've had anybody who ever read Understanding Media ask as many interesting points as you have. Nobody has ever, they don't even begin to, they go, yeah, I read it, I don't know what he's talking about. They don't even cite an example. You're the first person who's ever cited a whole bunch of examples. In that sense, you're a reader, you're a writer, you can read. And I've never had anybody remember what they read or even cite interesting points. And you're picking not the obvious points, the more obscure content. So you're doing great. You're the smartest person I've ever heard respond to understanding media in my rare time to talk to somebody about it.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna cry.
Yeah, you better cry. You better cry.
No, I'm going to. That's wonderful.
Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, what's it to cry about? You're so lonely, and everybody is. Everybody's lonely. That to have a compliment from another human being is just archetypal. It's just too intense.
No, it's not just that. It's that I almost didn't pay attention. Like, I almost wasn't even going to look at this.
Well,
thing ever.
Yeah, you were saying 6 months, 2 months ago, fuck you, Bob, I'll never read McLuhan if I find
it. It wasn't even 2 months. It was more like a month ago, yeah.
That's right.
And now it's like my favorite thing, thanks to Madeline.
That's right. And, you know, that's why, you know, I can understand. I'm sincere and he doesn't care about who dies or not. He sees billions of people dying every day and blowing it. And he can't give up being concerned. And he can't be concerned. I'm the same thing. I watch people and ignore the value of me. I mean, I should be president. I should be doing these conferences every day. I'm the fucking most intelligent, smartest, powerful person on the fucking planet. And yet I have billions of people every day ignoring me, which I've grown quite used to. And I don't cry when they pay attention to me. I actually don't even trust anybody when they start talking to me.
It's not because you're paying attention to me. It's really not that. It's just... feeling.
No, you're lucky.
I mean,
you almost died. Holy shit, I just almost got hit by a car. You know, like you actually made your life more vivid by actually not taking the wrong turn a month ago.
That's it. That's it. Everything is more vivid. It is.
Yeah.
This is a passion now, and it's a never-ending passion. So
yeah, now you become a real writer. Because you write, I mean, McLuhan was the greatest writer of the last 50 years. You want to write some stuff, you got to fucking deal with them. Can you outdo them? Can you use them? Can you get past them? See, this is, you got a good gold standard to write against.
Mm-hmm.
And up to that point, you didn't know. You didn't even know what the game was or what the rules were.
Well, thank God I didn't publish anything before I read this.
Did you say you're glad you didn't?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like I'm gonna go look at everything again in this lens,
right.
And it'll be just so much more vivid. Yeah.
That's right.
So I feel like I've hogged up a lot of time. Does anybody else want to talk? I'm just hogging up the line here.
Well, you're worth talking to. None of them ever came up. Ginny made a little attempt at talking to McLuhan a little bit, but she's very busy. Are you there, Ginny? You want to catch up to? You want to compete with Katie and?
Oh, be quiet! Don't do that.
No, we don't need your rules, Katie. You should don't put a negative. Just enjoy it and celebrate it. Come up with a different way of saying what I'm saying. But Ginny, you want to say something?
Well, let me say something, Katie. What you're seeing.
Well, Greg
here
is totally unqualified to participate. He's never read McClure. He doesn't know nothing. But anyway, we'll see what
Greg knows. All kinds of stuff.
But
yeah, he might. Well, anybody
here
useful.
Is quantum of communication here by Bob. This is the quantum level that we've all come to know and love. Bob is a mediacologist, and this is the quantum of mediacology. So you are getting quite a treat, my dear. He is rolling beautifully, and I've listened to thousands of hours of Bob. So, honey, you should be moist as a bundt cake.
I'm moist as a bundt cake.
Yeah, the sugary walls. She should be given a free bottle of RNA drops for creating a great Bob response.
That's right.
That's hilarious.
No, what we call it, Greg. Technically, we're not a media ecologist. That's back in McLuhan when there was different media. They've all become a seamless web and then extended themselves, squared themselves. So I call myself a paramedia, P-A-R-A, which is, you know, no boundaries, and it also includes the paranormal, which many people think Ion is. So I'm a paramedia ecologist. I was the first to do that.
Quantum of paramedia, right here, right now.
Well, quantum is limited. I don't use a term for physics. You know, para covers all everything. It's a puny little political operation that has lost its legs.
He's trying to play quantum instead of Quantum of Solace, the James Bond movie.
Yeah, which I just watched the other day.
what he's talking about, quantum of paramedicology, meaning that you are the James Bond of the medicology world.
Oh, you were quoting not quantum,
yes.
But the movie. Oh, yes,
yes,
I am the James. I am the Rumpelstiltskin of whatever category. I am Gordie Howe. I'm all of it. Everything of my church.
I'm Gordie Howe.
I'm kind of a big deal. I'm a replay of Gordie Howe.
That's right. I'm a legend in my own mind.
No, I'm a legend in your mind. I can't be bothered whether you can keep up with it.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious.
Very good.
What's cute is you go try to say Gordie Howe to someone who's 30 years old. They don't even know these people. My chart is like, understand me, it's got ancient people on there. No one knows anymore. I have updated the chart. Kiki made the new chart. Have you ever noticed my updates of the chart? I did 8 months ago.
Yeah, I remember Nicki Minaj was on it, and there was somebody was tweeted out about that, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's really good. It's very accurate. It's not my opinion. It's what who made it. For example, a replay of who you replace LaRouche would be Rush Limbaugh. LaRouche is considered a right winger. He's not really. He's more of a scholar. But you call him a right winger, then the homeopathic Android meme version of LaRouche was Rush Limbaugh. Who is a media maven replay of McLuhan? Howard Stern. Who's a replay of William Aaron Thompson in the New Age circuit? Oprah. Who is a replay of Croker?
Very good. Very good.
Can't remember who Croker was. That has to be some post DJ Spooky or Max Headroom something, some virtual thing. I forget now. I have to look it up. But it makes total sense what I put in there. The Android meme determined who would go in there.
Very good.
So Greg came on to compliment me. You have anything, or is Ginny going to say something about what Katie's saying?
I will say that I think that what the compliment that you paid Katie was very good. In the 3 years that I've been listening to you, Bob, and listening to you interact with many people on many forums, I would say that Katie, 2 times in a row, once for her conversation with you on the Bob Fest and now tonight, has actually done the appropriate amount of homework and is asking relevant questions. So I think that's very good. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking that Katie wins the gold medal, and Greg, who didn't even make the heat, goes up and says, "This will learn you a good lesson. It's a great lesson you learned from this, winning the gold medal."
That's right. You don't have to even be in the heat if you don't want to.
Greg knows why she won. He's been there before.
That's right. That's
actually, he hasn't. But we can make an endless dialogue. If we keep this up, Ian won't come back for a while. Now, I know a lot of people wouldn't like that, but I can talk a lot more. If the people, I respond to the quality of the thing. I mean, there's a lot for me to talk about anything, and you bring up different topics within the realm of possibilities. I can go on and on about it with new statements. I learn from what I'm saying myself.
I wanted to point out to you, though, that you you do make new statements, but 2 of the things that you've said this evening I have captured on video, and they're on my 2012 RNA radio station.
What are they? What's on video mean audio?
Yes, it's the American penis.
Yes,
remember, you did that.
The gun.
Matthew
the gun
Hurtado.
Thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
When the whole Alex Jones gun control thing came out.
I think I did that with the Love Job.
No, you did it with Matthew.
What, in a private session?
You did it with Matthew. No, you were on Matthew's Transcendence
Radio.
That's
right, American Freedom Radio. That's right, yes. And that's when we're waiting for Sean. I attacked Sean Morton during the commercials in that show. I lasted over who was the nearest American icon I could find.
Oh, my God.
And he still hasn't interviewed us. We think that he may have heard it or found out about it. But, okay, yes, I did that. And what was the other one?
I can't remember now, but it'll come back to me. But
yes, no, I repeat myself. It's like I'm a program. And you bring up American culture, it's a limited iconographic profile in the TV landscape. So then I've got pat things to say about it, which have never been heard before unless you heard me before. But it's the natural response. It's like objective art. You bring up that theme, here's the correct way to discuss that thing. You know what I mean?
Right. So I was going to say there is a certain type of formulary to the whole McLuhan thing, and once you kind of groove on it and get it under your belt, so to speak, then you can see why it would be obvious that the the whole thing about the gun and the American penis.
Right. And now McLuhan writes in his essay on Wyndham Lewis in 53 about Lewis cracked the formulaic nature of the scientific establishment. And so McLuhan shows the formula that he developed from Lewis and the formulaic method, and all of his books are formulaic. It's post-mathematic formula. So here, you say those words, you evoke something I don't get much chance to say, is that was part of his satire, that he presented a script, a formula, to mime and satirize the formula that the governments and the scientists were all playing to people, or public relations was. It's a formulaic society for the last 100 years. That's Bernays comes in. The popular idea that he started public relations. Bernays, the propagandist for Rockefeller.
Nephew of Sigmund Freud.
Right, and did the medical brainwashing, the first phase of it.
Right.
But
create the disease and offer the cure.
So you can go on and read all kinds of, Alex Jones kinds of anger about that guy, but none of them talk about it intelligently. Bernays is not as significant as Phineas Wake or later what McLuhan did. I shift the focus of the values of things. What they make videos about and celebrate information about is puny compared to what I could tell them about, and I'll see, go read this guy, not Bernays. You know what I mean? So
yes, but I do think that there is a certain point of the difference about why it's important to why McLuhan fits in this context and these Bernays people and the other thing fit in the other context is because the Ionic context in the world that you're playing in is not a victim-driven world. It's not where somebody's looking to place blame. McLuhan is strictly for somebody who's interested in taking total responsibility or being in aware of or in command of.
No, I wouldn't use those words. McLuhan is for people to become aware that they are satellites floating around the planet. And so in Bernays, that's about American business, European business, and how it sort of marketed itself.
But it's for people who want to keep being victimized. It's
what
for
is?
The powerless ones, the Bernayses.
No, not even that. Let's not. That's a cliche. People, you can't. I wouldn't use that if I was on Jeff Renz or someplace, because that's everybody is bored of hearing about victims and not victims. Here's how you'd say it. You'd say you don't live in the United States. You live and have access to all kinds of cultural memes globally all the time in your media diet, in your four stomachs, or maybe six stomachs, but all different bodies. And so to analyze Bernays and what he did to American culture is very parochial, provincial, and local. Why not look into what these larger environments do globally, and what was Bernays in China? Why didn't Bernays happen in China? Why didn't it happen in Africa? Well, you bring in the cultural dynamics, the sensory profiles of those different parts of the globe, and how different technologies change their sensory ratios. In other words, you are personally a United Nations monitoring what's happening all over the world, and you can do it once you get these sensory profiles down, and you wouldn't stay local to talk about, oh, how terrible American capitalism became. It's too local. So I'm saying you become a lot vaster in your perspective, and you become the pterodactyl floating over the planet, and you can look at every culture, what you heard about it, what books say, and movies, and TV documentaries, and what revolutions, murders, and scandals come out of it, and then you can show the media dynamic as a larger ground that involves everybody. To say,
I
to talk about television
that,
is not talking about communism.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that requires so much use of responsible, thinking and right-mindedness.
Not responsible, it requires timing and time to absorb a bit.
Yes, but most people just want to look for somebody to blame. They don't want to be.
They can start blaming larger perspectives. I can say, look, let's make this. You want to show how victimless you are, how much of a victim you are? We can even do it better. We'll show you how you got disappeared 100 years ago and you didn't even have parents. You lived in a mythic environment. So you can develop the victim thing to out-victimize yourself than anybody else ever got victimized. And then you go into the non-victim situation, how the media made you a super angel. You do both levels at least, and then more. You would not get stuck on one side or the other judging your quality. You're in both levels. Everybody's an angel and devil today.
I know. I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying is I don't think that's the goal of most people.
Who cares?
They want to judge themselves.
We're here. The goal is your mouth and entertain yourself. I mean, if you luckily have someone else, I had a good run with Katie, so we had a good session. That's what we're looking for, better ways to have fun. So I wouldn't care whether I don't try to reach the masses. They're trying to reach me, and I'm slowly inaccessible. I'm a government with my people in exile. I'm not a government in exile. I'm still governing, still in charge, but the people have been exiled. That's why we don't bring in ethics, morals, and that. You use language and scenarios, and you can quote embody environments and include all kinds of imagery, and that's how you write. Now, so you look at Finnegan's Wake did that. And once the more you understand that, you can actually read and understand and think about how Finnegan's Wake was written in a way that most people can't do it. So are we trying to... most people, I wouldn't use that phrase. There's no most people. Ain't no people. Most machines aren't interested in victimless information. Let's say that, Ginny. We should ban people from our conversation.
I wasn't interested until 4 weeks ago. So
yeah, and the machine known as Katie. We don't know why the machine known as Katie showed up and got interested. That's highly suspicious, but we can enjoy it. We can enjoy Katie's interest, Katie Machine.
And I thought I was fully engaged.
That's right. You were celebrating. You were a god. I mean, that's what's so funny. I watched people on Deuce claim their godhood. They're actually still little insects. They haven't even started to understand what a god is.
Right. I was like a cockroach.
Yeah. Claiming you were a human being.
Yes, it's true.